This is a podcast recorded at CB Expo, Cannabis Business Expo and Conference, on September 16, 2023 in Dortmund, Germany. At the main stage, Klaas van Os, Kaas van Lahoven, Patrick Stevens, and Kerné Mellison. Moderated by Thomas Rau. Discussed the following topic: unraveling the Dutch cannabis experiment and lessons for global legalization. Language, English. Enjoy your podcast listening.
Good afternoon. Welcome all to this next 50 minutes, they just explained me, to tell you something more about the status of the Dutch experiment for recreational cannabis. I want first to have 1 or 2 minutes maximum for our four guests to introduce themselves. Klaas, if you can start.
Yeah, hello. Klaas van Os, I'm the CEO and co-founder of Q Farms. Now we're going to establish our company in the northeast of Holland. We're going to start construction in about 2-3 weeks. So for us, it's going to be, let's say, end of September that we will be ready to participate.
Thank you. Kars?
Kars van Laarhoven. Thank you, Thomas, that I could join here. I've been involved in the Dutch cannabis industry as long as I can remember, because my uncle used to have 4 coffee shops. And since 2018, I've been working at a wholesaler. We sell cannabis accessories in the south of the Netherlands. And since 2021, I'm also officially the owner. And we have about 50% market share. So part of my daily business is talking to coffee shops. And I think this is the reason why Thomas asked me to join this this conference today.
Indeed. Thank you. Patrick?
All right. Hello. My name is Patrick. I've been in the cannabis industry since about 22 years or something. I started out as in the grow shop industry as an export manager, and some people maybe know me from my 15 years working at BioBiz Organic Plant Food, where I was a sales manager, and I traveled all over the world. Since a couple of years, I had the fantastic opportunity to work as account manager for Hologram, which is one of the licensed producers also located in Groningen, next to our neighbors from Q Farms. The last 1.5 years, I spent most of my time visiting the coffee shops and trying to get like an impression of what they feel, how they feel about the experiment, and also what their wishes and expectations are when the experiment is going to start. So I'm basically trying to make an inventory of what the emotion is amongst the coffee shops from the moment that we are going to start selling legal cannabis and hashish. And it's been one of the most interesting challenges I've had in my whole working career. You know, working with grow shops, you talk with people that cultivate cannabis like on a hobby level and most of the time for personal use. And now basically we are stepping it up to a situation where we're going to produce cannabis on a professional level and offering that to the cannabis consumers in the Netherlands. So that's an amazing challenge, and I'm really looking forward to starting to sell the first legal cannabis and hashish in the Netherlands.
Thank you, Patrick. Corné?
Corné, I run an investment firm and I own one of the 10 recreational licenses in the Netherlands.
Okay, thank you. We decided 2 days ago, that means the organizer of the CB Expo decided not to give a first a presentation about 45 years of tolerance policy and the current, the last 7 years of the development of the experiment in the Netherlands. But I will, for the people who don't know, give you in 2 minutes a short view about that. In the Netherlands, as most of you will know, we have a tolerance policy on cannabis and hash for 45 years. We have an existence of 573 coffee shops nowadays, and they are allowed to sell cannabis and hash, and they are allowed to have 500 gram in stock each day. What happened or what went wrong the last 10 years is that crime increased a lot. And it's not that they robbed coffee shops, that never happens, but they robbed stash places around the coffee shop, because the coffee shop, the average coffee shop, sells much more than 500 gram a day. So you needed places, and they got robbed. So that really was something that justice and police were not happy with. And the other one is healthcare was under pressure, because you have no idea where all these illegal growers grow their cannabis and produce their hash. Because, and that's what not everybody knows, coffee shops are allowed to sell cannabis and hash, and people are allowed, it's tolerated, to use it, but you are not allowed to grow cannabis in the Netherlands. So how the cannabis and the hash enters the coffee shop is one big miracle for 45 years already.
It's magic.
So that had to change. I mean, that took long for the government, but the government thought, like, we have to change that. What happened 7 years ago, the government decided to not national legalize, because that was due to political parties with a Christian background a little bit difficult. So they had an idea for an experiment, and the experiment is very simple. They selected 10 and now 11 municipalities where the coffee shops, all the coffee shops in those municipalities, have to buy their cannabis, hash, and edibles from 10 selected growers. And that was 2.5 years ago they got selected. To give you an idea, 7 years ago we had the government had this idea, and it took us 7 years to make laws, to make a tender procedure, to go from a level of the state to the level of the local municipalities. And and that was a hell of a journey. The good thing is that yesterday morning our coalition, because we have elections in November, but this morning, the ministers gave a green light to really start with the experiment, and that is the first phase. And that will say that the three growers who are already ready to grow at this moment are ready to deliver to the coffee shops in December of this year to two municipalities, Tilburg and Breda. And then the next half year, 6-8 months, the rest of the growers will follow and will deliver to the complete 11 municipalities. That experiment will take 4 years at least. And it is unclear what will happen afterwards, if it will be national legalized, but it depends. That's why it is an experiment. It depends the outcome. Is it going to work or not? And what I would like to do is to these people who are involved for so many years to tell a little bit about which mistakes are made by the government in building up this program. What is the status at the moment, and what we still have to face, what kind of challenges from the perspective of the grower and as a perspective of the coffee shop. Klaas, can you start by explaining in a couple of minutes, not longer than that, one or two major mistakes, as you see it, which are made, and what, for instance, Germany could learn from?
I think the most important thing is there's always been delay, and we can talk about the negative side of it. I think that's one of the mistakes we made, is to confirm all stakeholders, to confirm that it has been a negative draw. We have allowed ourselves to put negative news in the press. That's one thing. When you look back to the delay, I think that all stakeholders have been improved. So there's a positive side of it. Every grower has been able to develop much further their plans, create support. And the other thing is, knowing that there has been delays, the political push was to create a false expectation each time again. Yeah, now we're going to start, now we're going to start, now we're going to start. And basically the growers know best when the start has been able.
because they know their plan on construction and creating false estimations, expectations. I think that's the major concern. We almost lost support politically, but also with the coffee shops.
Okay.
And that's the other one, connection with the coffee shops. They have not been involved enough.
Yeah. How do you see that, Cars, with your background and as a wholesaler, you have a lot of contacts with the coffee shops, also in the two first cities who are going to start in December?
Exactly. Well, let me start by saying that everything that is new, people don't like changes. Especially coffee shops, they've been along for a very long time, but you have a few coffee shop owners that that like to think forward, to be innovative. So I think this is a general problem to work with. And coffee shops, they have like a lot of good things, also for the owners. And one of these things is that they are, it's financially, they are very strong companies. Most of the coffee shops, they are millionaires. So they're going to earn less money. This is something, of course, as an entrepreneur, this is something you rather not have. And on the other side is that we see with all of our customers now, even a city as where I'm from, Tilburg, and now we have 10 active coffee shops. Every coffee shop is like its little mini marketing machine within the reach of law. So everybody has their own little special kinds of weed or hash, which really draws customers to their coffee shop. And I think this is one of the biggest worries that coffee shops have at the moment, how they're going to diversify themselves among the other coffee shops. They're very afraid that everything will be the same as their neighbor. So,
yeah.
But, they cannot advertise. So how they will be different from their neighbor? I think this is maybe the biggest issue.
Okay, how do you see that, Patrick?
But on the other hand, to continue on your argumentation, indeed there is a coffee shop or everybody always fears the unknown. You know, on the other side, there is also coffee shops that are saying, hey, listen, when we are starting this experiment and we are basically going towards legalization, does that maybe also give me the possibility of getting the license, which is owned by my father, to be put on my name? Because at this moment, it's very simple. If you have a coffee shop and the license holder dies, then the coffee shop disappears. You know, and nowadays there is children of the original owner of the coffee shop that are running the shop for several years. And they're like, hey, listen, what happens if my father or my mother dies? Do we have the possibility to get the license? And for me, now at this moment, this is not possible. If we are going past this experiment and towards legalization, then we would have this possibility to basically say, okay, I'm taking over the coffee shop. So like you have a new goal for the future. And at the same time, when it comes to like the whole experiment and the way that we've set it up, I think, you know, the first issue is basically started with the fact that this experiment that we're having is a compromise between political parties that are in favor of legalization and political parties that are against legalization. And they try to meet each other in the middle way. And with a compromise, maybe you get a political solution, but with a compromise, you basically also have all involved parties basically not getting completely what they want or need, but having to deal with just a little bit of that. You know, and that is basically the first problem. So you are allowed to grow cannabis legally, but for example, if you want to get the VAT bill back from a bill, you cannot, for the simple fact that the plant itself is still illegal. So basically, on every invoice that we get from, for example, building our facility or buying equipment, the 21% VAT, we cannot ask it back from taxes, because if the government would give us those VAT back, then they basically have already legalized cannabis in the Netherlands. So they're not willing to do this. And furthermore, I think there has just been a general underestimation of the complexity of going from a tolerated system to a legalized system. For the simple fact that you know, the cannabis industry has been tolerated by the government for the last 30, 40 years, but that doesn't mean that they know who we are and how we work and what our daily routine is and which difficulties coffee shops face on a daily basis to try and get new supplies in. You know, it's I like to compare it to going on a date with somebody. And, you know, we are used to dating people for the last 30, 40 years. The government is not used on going on a date. So they first want to get to know us better and whatever. They are basically setting up a lot of rules and restrictions because they fear the unknown of what could happen. But on the other side, we are just cannabis entrepreneurs. And for us, you know, growing an honest and beautiful cannabis plant is our daily routine. Simply just believe that we are going to go towards a system where we want to give people a clean and honest product instead of thinking that we will take every opportunity to put as much of our legally produced cannabis and trying to put it on the black market and put the money in our pocket. That is not our intention at all. And the way that we set up our system is basically one that is of a distrust between the authorities and the licensed producers. And
thank you, Patrick.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see the clock there.
It's a complex story. Yeah.
Yeah. Corné, how do you see that as an owner / investor?
See what?
How the things went the last 7 years and which what mistakes would not have been made or could have been done better?
I'm not quite familiar with what happened over the past 7 years. The only thing I can say from an investment perspective, the way the candidates or the parties were selected was faulty. And one of the things that was missing was a clear proof of funds or proof of financial capabilities test. So there is at present at least 4, maybe 5 out of the 10 licensees who are undercapitalized or grappling with their capital structure, which leads to huge delays in construction. And that is, in my view, problem number 1 and 2.
Okay. And how do you see, Corné, what do you think are still major challenges?
Well, that's
the position now.
That's what I just said, is still the major challenge, because all these financial difficulties have not been resolved.
Yeah, right. But you're overseeing a small detail. Huh? I mean, in 2019, we didn't have a war in Ukraine. We didn't have, you know, our electricity bills are now like 400%.
No, it's a different topic. The topic was the selection of the candidates was done without any reasonable determination whether and to what extent these people were capable of running a dozens of millions project. And that led to the current predicament. That's unrelated to inflation and cost saving, rises, different topic. The selection process itself was faulty. Mm. Okay. No investment bank would ever select people for a hundreds of millions project this way. Yeah. Just filling out a Wikipedia page and typing up some addresses and then submit it and go into a lottery.
Yeah. Yeah, I think everybody agrees about that. Yeah.
But I think the main reason why they chose a lottery, again, you know, this is the fear of the unknown. They chose a lottery because if they would have gone through like a different selection process, it's always the possibility that somebody says, hey, wait a minute, you've selected this company because you are involved in them. There could always be like a hint of corruption. And if you do a lottery, basically every politician can wash his hands and say, we had nothing to do with that.
That's not quite correct, because the original number of applicants was an odd 140, and only 40 people went into a lottery. So quite to contrary to your point, it was a determination process without a lottery up front, and the people who went into the lottery were insufficiently vetted.
How do you see that, Klaas?
I fully agree. Looking at the status now, as Corné mentioned, when we're moving forward, we will be the last. We definitely had issues with our investors withdrawing. That can always happen, but the situation now is we have determined criteria for the start, the official start of the experiment, and it is sufficient product. and sufficient choice and high quality. Well, with 3-4 growers still in the doubt.
True.
The ones who are now have been starting, who are now ready to grow or start growing soon, they run the risk. You do that. We have that. You have it.
True.
So I agree.
Yeah. What are the future challenges from this point, from now, the status at the moment? We know that the three growers are going to start delivering at the end of the year, only to two cities. Next year, the rest will follow, as well the growers as the participating cities. What are still things which need to be solved? Just mention two. The two most important.
Clarity on the clarity on the start of the experiment, the formal start. I think that's also, especially also for the coffee shops, that they have the guarantee that we as a grower can fulfill our commitment. Yeah. Sufficient product, especially on hash. That's our major concern. The variety, because it is their earnings model, and we have to fill that in. And we have to be really sure that we have the quality and the variety and the volumes at a certain time. And that's my major concern. And that is also what I said, the involvement of the coffee shops with the government and with us. From what is realistic? Mm-hmm. Better on high quality than making speed.
Now, Kars, how do you see... Because that appeared in all the paperwork the last couple of years, suddenly for everybody, that edibles was also a topic. Now that it is allowed, how do you see that towards, how are coffee shops reacting on that?
Well, the Dutch government has been having a policy that people should smoke less in general the last few years. So. But also, in the past, the Dutch cannabis culture was influenced in the United States. Now it's the other way around. So, yeah, also the coffee shops are looking like what's happening in the United States. Edibles are very, very popular in the United States. And what I heard from a customer that also because the government's having a policy people should smoke less, at least with tobacco, is I think it's a very good development that edibles are allowed. Also for people who want to use it, and not only recreational, but also medical. So without edibles, there would be like a black market again. If the coffee shops cannot offer it, the same with the hash in the future, then somebody else will fill this gap. So if the growers cannot give all the products the coffee shop needs, then as far as I'm concerned, the experiment will fail.
Yeah. All right, but the advantage is, you know, is in the end, we will have 10 licensed producers. I don't expect that every licensed producer is going to be excellent in each part of the products that we sell. You know, we sell cannabis, we sell hashish, we sell pre-roll joints, and we sell edibles. One licensed producer might excel in a specific type of hashish or a specific type of edible, and one might excel in a specific strain of cannabis or whatever. So the advantage or the luxury that the 83 shops that participate in the experiment will have is that they can basically pick and mix from 10 licensed producers in the products that they excel in. So they have, like, they can basically, you know, they can basically choose the colors on their palette from which they are going to make their painting. You know, it gives every coffee shop the possibility to come from a supply and demand store to like a cannabis information center where people know from the beginning when they enter what they are going to buy and what kind of effect they can expect from it. You know, it's going to be a much more open economy in coffee shops. So instead of, you know, looking at the issues that can arise, you know, there is, for every negative, there is a huge amount of opportunities at the same time.
Okay. What I would like to, because we are in Germany, and in Germany they're talking about legalization, and in a very fast time they want to arrange things. One of the things that bothers a lot of people is that the first pillar of that law represents as well home growing of tree plants. Well, we'll see what happens if it's a two or four, but home growing of tree plants as well as growing on an industrial way not coffee shop but social clubs. But how do you, can just a reaction from who wants to react, how do you see this as well, home growing will be legalized in regard to legalized growing where you can measure quality, etc. Is there who wants to react on that?
I think the focus point in what you're saying, I would change that. In Holland, the foundation for the success of the experiment is the 40 years, more than 40 years, existing trusted supply chain, the sales channel, the coffee shops. And you've seen that in Canada, in the US, and also in Germany, you don't have that foundation. So it's easier to set up a farm to grow cannabis. It's much more difficult to create a fixed, trusted sales channel where consumers find their way. So I would put the focus and the emphasis more on the distribution channel. And then look at licenses or whatever system.
What do you think about that, Corné?
No, I totally share that view. And I think Holland is unique in its infrastructure with retail capabilities all over the place. And that Germany is a ways off in terms of establishing that. And it will be a huge challenge to come up with something that replicates that or substitutes that. That's going to be a difficult one.
Yeah. What some of the people here might not know, because I want to talk about the topic hash, is that the recent 45 years hash was mainly imported from other countries. It was not produced in the Netherlands. Now the 10 growers have to, or some of the growers have to produce hash to fulfill that demand. That is something I would like to ask Kars. What do you hear? Is there a real fear with the coffee shops because they cannot buy it in any other way?
It's a major concern. It's a major concern, especially because some coffee shops, they, let's say, 80% of the turnover exists from selling hash and. The countries who've been exporting it in an illegal way, it's been done for hundreds of years. So even when the lead time of the experiment, it's about 7 years, you cannot expect from the growers to create the same product that has been in the market for hundreds of years. Yeah. And also the consumers, they are used to the Moroccan, for example, the Moroccan hash. So yeah, this is a major concern. And I remember one time I was talking to Vera Bergkamp a long time ago. One of her ideas, her crazy ideas, was she wanted to have a treaty with Morocco. A great idea actually. to import a hash legally from Morocco, and then the problem is solved. But yeah, this is something I think the experiment, it's a step in the right direction, but importing hash from Morocco, licensed by our government, it's far away.
Yeah. Patrick, you want to add something?
Yeah, I think the whole hash issue, because, okay, when I first started visiting coffee shops, most of them all said, what are we going to do with the Moroccan hash? You know, and I genuinely started investigating in which production methods we could take to try and imitate the taste and the effect of Moroccan hashes. You know, and it's actually, it is possible. You just have to dry your weed in the sun, and then you get a specific extra terpene which gives this Moroccan flavor. But in the end, people that buy Moroccan hash is a very specific target group within the cannabis experiment. It's most of all tourists, So people from Germany that buy hashish in Nijmegen and people from Belgium that buy hashish in Tilburg. And they are a very specific age group as well. Now, the biggest new cannabis market or group that is coming up right now is 50 plus. You know, it's older people that are looking not only for recreational use, but also for medicinal use. They have no history with Moroccan hashish. You know, and for the people that do have this traditional feel and they want to have the same, you can basically, by selecting specific strains and by selecting specific production processes, you can basically make a hash that doesn't taste like Moroccan hash, but that will have a similar effect. And that way you can satisfy those people. And you can satisfy them also by saying, you now you're not only just buying an anonymous 5-gram piece of blonde pollen, but now you're buying a piece of 5-gram and you know exactly which terpene profile is in there and you understand much better why this weed is giving you this specific effect. And yeah. you can continue to work on that.
Well spoken.
Yeah. Thank you.
Another issue, there are so many issues or topics, is that what I explained in the beginning, at the moment, the last 45 years, this cannabis and hash appears to find a way through the back door of the coffee shop in a mysterious way. Now, in the new experiment, under the law of the experiment, the 10 growers are responsible for the logistics to the coffee shop. What we heard the last couple of years from the municipalities, as well the municipalities where the growers are situated, as the municipalities who have those participating coffee shops, that they fear a lot that the transport is a real issue for crime, for instance. Does one of you have something to respond on that?
But it's not a problem, man. It's a challenge.
The good thing is that we, most of the growers, so 8 out of the 10 growers, we have a grower collective, as we call it. So topics like transport, we join forces to find indeed the solution and the challenge. So we have several options and we cooperate a lot also with the coffee shops. So we know their demands, we know the planning, and basically what we do, we're going to work together with, we have to select maybe from our own group or the existing security transporters, set up a situation where, the logistics and the supply chain dedicated to the coffee shops and the growers together, very open way in calculation and in organization. So it is a lot of work. It is extra what we do, but by joining forces as growers and coffee shops, it emphasizes also the good things and the positive things that are happening now within the experiment.
Okay,
it is a challenge, but we will find a solution.
It's a huge boost of confidence for the coffee shops as well, that they're seeing that we as licensed producers are actually working together to find a transport solution for them.
And it is the major concern for coffee shops. It's their safety and their concern.
Maybe a remark. In our view, it's not about crime. And in our view, the demands on the part of the government are exaggerated. But it's about logistics. Exactly. And it's about fairly complicated logistics. Uh-huh. So it's about demand. It's about the pull. When are you able to deliver? And I share Klaas's view that a cooperative type approach is a good solution, and I think that there is a very positive attitude towards achieving that. But it's not about crime. We think that you shouldn't go over the top with armored cars and whatever. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot more expensive watches that are being transferred with normal cars all over the day.
Yeah, ballots of iPhones and stuff.
iPhones. I mean, let's keep it simple. But the actual logistics are very complicated.
Yeah. We are currently in a situation where basically our cargo is better protected than the people that drive the van. And that's kind of a weird situation because you would expect, you know, the drivers, that their safety comes first, you know. It's just a couple of kilos of weed, you know. It's not that expensive, you know. And it's also what people underestimate is, you know, when we are selling our products, they come pre-packaged.
You know, we don't have like the fantastic situation the coffee shop says, give me 1 kilo of Amnesia, and we give them a bag of 1 kilo. It all comes prepackaged. It's not really interesting for people with bad intentions to steal from us, because then you would basically spend the whole evening cutting open all those packages and putting it in a new baggie again, you know? So yeah, that's kind of weird.
Yeah, maybe for the audience, because we talk very easy about it, 8 of the 10 growers see each other for, I think, almost 1.5, 2 years on a monthly basis to discuss several topics and challenges, but with the understanding of the government, so the two ministries involved. For instance, our government, and that's with all kind of issues, wanted to develop a track and trace system by themselves. That always takes a lot of time and a lot of problems, but not to give you the feeling that we are sitting together and discuss things with each other without the government knowing. It's all with the understanding of the government.
Maybe an additional remark about that. An interesting feature about the situation we're in today is that normally you want to win and you want your competition to lose, but in this specific situation, it is super important that at least most of the participants win, because if there's not enough capabilities and not enough variety in the supply, yeah, then we all lose.
Exactly.
Hear, hear.
Hear, hear, yeah, totally. Yeah, it's kind of weird that we are...
We love each other.
For now, huh?
Yeah, for now.
Depends on where you get me for breakfast.
I'm looking at the clock. Are there any...
Now maybe I can add to that, because also in the government, it's all new. And also for the coffee shops. And by working together, we also speak from one voice. So you bring all the knowledge together and you speak out of one voice from the growers collective to the government. So basically, they learn from us. So you can help each other in a much more effective way. So look in Germany, do that.
Yeah.
Let us join Germany.
Are there any questions from somebody? Please.
Oh. Uh-oh.
No? Are we so clear?
You were mentioning that as growers in the Dutch experiment, you were thinking about developing a track and trace system by yourself. How did that end up? What solution are you now using to track compliance, and how do you prove that to the regulator?
I don't hear.
I didn't get it.
No.
Oh, sorry. I was asking about the track and trace system. You were saying that as cultivators in the experiment, you were thinking about developing one. Which technology did you end up employing, and how do you prove your compliance to the regulator, and what are your challenges in that?
If I get it correct, you're asking for the who developed it?
Track and trace. No, that we wanted to develop
trace.
Itself.
It is by the Justice. That's a government department or organization that develops also for our tax authorities systems. So that was just the choice of the government to do it by themselves. And in the beginning, that was very fixed, and there was no flexibility. But this is the best example. By joining forces together, we hired a few specialists who started testing, and that person became the spokesman to Justice, that department that developed that. Also from the side from the coffee shops, so they're also involved. And now you see the effects of it, that is becoming more flexible and easier to use. Not ideal yet, but moving forward. But it took a little bit of time.
Thank you.
It's what is important to know also, this track and trace system, for example, we cannot get the source code for it. It's completely a closed system. You know, we want to integrate that track and trace, of course, with our own systems, and that is a big issue. Again, you know, because basically they build a system based on, you know, not knowing with which kind of people they are dealing with. You know, coffee shops were basically tolerated, but still illegal. So they basically build a system that they want as close as possible so that we do not have the opportunity to tweak it in our advantage, you know, which is basically a flawed start to begin with, because you're expecting that we were looking for ways to beat the system instead of working with the system to supply an honest product to the market. You know, that's again, you know, and indeed, you know, by making sure that we have people with knowledge about the situation step forward and talk with the people, the IT people from the government, trying to make it in a better system. And that has given us a lot of steps. If we would have all been like, maybe if we all had our separate IT specialist trying to talk to the government, we would not have achieved the same goals that we have today. So sticking together was a good choice straight from the beginning.
Any more questions? Then I would add, because we still have a couple of minutes.
I would like to know from somebody in the audience, who is going to jump in the car and drive to the Netherlands and buy some legal weed as soon as it becomes available? That's what I'm interested in. We have an audience here, but yeah, there's one. Okay, there's number two.
Two customers.
we've already won two customers. Awesome. Thank you, guys.
As I explained in the beginning, that in the current situation of the last 45 years, coffee shops are allowed to have 500 gram in stock a day. In the new situation, according to the law, they can have a stock which covers the turnover of 1 week. So that's a huge difference. Cars, do you know if the coffee shops in, for instance, Tilburg, where your company is situated, so you should have good contacts there, are they already busy by building huge storage places, secured storage places?
Well, this is like the stuff coffee shops don't talk about. They never talk about the stash. But of course, if you some coffee shops, maybe they drive to from a secret location to the coffee shop 10 times a day with unmarked cars, people with small bags. It's a huge difference. With the current situation, it's less risky. It's a lot better, and I think it's workable also. You can relate to a bar. Maybe they have like big purchases one or two times a week. So yeah, this is one of the things that they are most happy about. It's having more in stock, so yeah. Less risk of transportation, because every time you're transporting your cannabis, you could be arrested by the police if you are not in the coffee shop. Yeah. You could be robbed. So this is a huge benefit. It's a huge benefit.
Yeah, and then as we said, talking about the transportation, by working together, 6, 7, 8 growers, that means volume, and you can set up your whole supply chain by delivering 3, 4, 5 times a week to a coffee shop. So basically, it's nice that they have the capacity and ability to have a week's value stock. But basically, if we work very close together, we can reduce that issue.
Yeah. And that's the best situation for everyone.
That's ideal.
You don't want to keep stock that you don't need.
Hey.
One more coffee shop issue. Most of the coffee shops have suppliers for probably more than 2 decades. They know each other for a long time, and they have to say goodbye to that relationship. Is that will that be easy?
No. But what I hear, what I heard is because they are afraid for the situation after the experiment, because when the experiment takes 4 years, and maybe they will say the experiment, okay, it was only an experiment, then you need to find for a lot of new suppliers again, and then you would be in an illegal situation again. It takes time to build these relationships, because everything is done by a handshake. A word is a word, and you don't work with contracts. And if you don't talk to these people for 4 or 5 years, and you have to start all over again. So this is the situation you are the most afraid of, what I hear from our customers.
Corné?
I just want to say a last word from the perspective of an investor. what is the overarching aim? The overarching aim is not being profitable in 4 years and going home.
Thank you.
If that experiment stops after 4 years, regardless how much money was lost or earned, it's a huge failure. Our goal has always been to see the rollout across the Netherlands, right into Germany and adjacent countries. And we see it as the end of the prohibition. And we just want to create one of the many Johnny Walkers. Amen.
Yeah, indeed. That's well spoken. Absolutely.
We have 2 minutes for one last question. Oh, there was a question.
Hi. I hope I will be clear because it's a complex situation, but I have a question related to the coffee shops and the production of cannabis. Considering that who is working on production of cannabis currently struggles to have a consistent cycle-by-cycle type of production, I wonder how the coffee shops actually see quality, because one of the discussions I heard here today is that we need to focus on quality of all the varieties that are going to go into coffee shops to fit on the quality that the coffee shops are also defining as quality. Yet, the coffee shops have been relying in productions that are not consistent from cycle to cycle for decades. So where is the difference between what has been produced until now and what you're aiming as quality from now onwards with this type of tender?
Oh, that's a good question.
1 minute.
Sorry.
Okay. The difference is going to be that you are going to not buy a product which says sunset sherbet, but in reality it's a power plant, which says this is a bio, but it has been grown on rock wool and it has been sprayed with pesticides. What is going to be the difference in quality? Because honestly, flavors can be different from every person. What is going to be different is that when you buy a flower, you know exactly which genetic it is, you know who's made it, you know when it was harvested, you know how many cannabinoids are in there, you know which terpenes are in there and which percentage. So you know exactly what you're buying instead of I go into a coffee shop and he has Red Libanon. I say, Red Libanon? I haven't seen that in like 10, 15 years. He says, yeah, well, actually, it's Moroccan, but I just name it Red Libanon because people like it. You know, that is the first difference in quality that's going to be. If you get, for example, paranoid by a specific terpene, you can now identify which flower not to buy. That is the difference in quality. 3, 2, 1, go. So
thanks.
Does that answer your question a little bit? All right, thank you.
Thank you all for joining. Thanks, audience.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. You can find more podcasts on our channel, and we look forward to welcoming you to one of our upcoming events. All dates are available at cb-net.com.